The Hard Shoulder on Newstalk.
With Nissan Subscribe and Drive. No deposit, no compromise, no fuss. Find out more at nissan.ie.
I've now been joined by a rather smiling Taoiseach. I don't know how he slept a wink last night with the news that Peter Casey is standing in the Dublin West constituency. Right. I'm sure he's terrified of his prospects of re-election.
Quaking in my boots.
Indeed. The leader of Fine Gael, TD for Dublin West, you're most welcome indeed. We're continuing our series of leaders' interviews, Mary Lou MacDonald, Roisin Shorthall, and today it's the Fine Gael leader. You're welcome. Could I start?
Thanks, Ivan. Is this a new studio? I don't know.
A little bit like this. Okay. You're not that familiar with it because you haven't been here for a while. But what I wanted to ask you first of all was...
Hope you didn't miss me.
No, I did. When you were elected Taoiseach in 2017, the opinion polls had your personal approval rating and that of your government in the high 60s. The latest polls, across a range of polls, has them about half that in the low 30s. And I was thinking about this in the context of, well, Brexit didn't work out too bad. The economy hasn't imploded. Employment hasn't, you know, done anything other than increase. In fact, the economy is going well. What do you attribute the drop in the halving of your support?
Well, you know, Ivan, polls go up and down. They've gone down and have come back up again before, and perhaps they'll come back up again before the election. And I know Angela Merkel quite well at this stage, and she's somebody who is on her third term as Chancellor, and she kind of said to me that actually often after the second year, that's when your popularity rating or your satisfaction rating comes down, because you get to the point, you know, where you've been in office for a period of time, so you have all the problems that come with incumbency when you first come in to start. People have very high expectations.
Honeymoon.
Things they want you to do, and then you get a certain number of people who are disappointed that you didn't do the things they hoped you did, and then people who are frustrated about the various problems that the country faces that they then start to you know blame on you for not fixing in the way obviously they don't in your first year when they're giving you a chance. So it's kind of the normal course of politics.
Well,
in many ways.
I maybe can help you out here. Some of the reasons why you might have halved in support, for example, your connection with rural Ireland. Your government are seen as quite Dublin-centric. Owen Murphy, Pascal Donohue, a lot of Dublin ministers, you yourself a Dublin minister. And you know, you might connect very well with, we'll say, a younger Twitter community. But you remember the time you said you'd eat less meat and that. When I go to rural Ireland, I find something of a disconnect, whereas this was always the bedrock of kind of blue shirt Fine Gael support in amongst farmers and so on. Do you think you, as leader of the party, connect well with rural Ireland, and do you understand that they're not fully sharing? I know the statistics in relation to employment are not fully sharing what's happening in Dublin.
Well, Ivan, I'm not sure our urban and rural numbers are all that different. There is a difference, but it's not as big as you might make out or might think. I'm very aware of the fact, like, one of the privileges that I have as Taoiseach is travelling the country. I've been in every county in Ireland in the last year, if not twice, meeting people from all sorts of backgrounds, and they don't just tell me what I want to hear. You know, they tell me about their concerns and their worries and hopes for the future. And I'm very aware that there is an economic recovery that's happening all over the country, but in a very different way. You know, the city's booming, becoming quite congested. Still in a lot of our rural areas, a lot of dereliction, shop fronts closed up.
But there's not many cultures in the cabinet.
Quite a few are from rural constituencies. You know, I can go through them if you want.
No, well, Heather Humphreys as well. But no, but do you understand my point? That do you feel you have a personal connection with rural Ireland and all that it speaks for, and maybe Middle Ireland?
Yeah, of course I do. First of all, because I am Taoiseach for the whole country. Nobody is Taoiseach just for the city they come from or the background they come from. You're Taoiseach for the whole country, and that's what I am. And secondly, like pretty much everyone in Dublin, I'm only one generation in Dublin. You know, I'm one generation yeah. from the farm in Waterford that
you
my
don't
mother
feel
grew up
it's
in.
It's unbalanced
still in the family.
Regional development. Everything's happening on the East Coast or cities. And if you're not in either of those, you're goosed.
Oh, I think there is unbalanced regional development between East and West, or the East Coast and the rest of the country in many ways. The question is, what do you do about it? And you know what we're doing about it. I set up a Department for Rural Affairs and put Michael Ring, one of our rural ministers, you might like to describe him as a culture, I'd say a Mayo man, who's in charge of that department with €1 billion fund. And I'm seeing now all over the country the effect of that. You know, was in Edwardstown, Longford the other day, you know, seeing where the new library is being built, seeing where the old Ulster Bank, you know, a lot of banks in small towns are closed, now being reimagined as a co-working hub, you know, exactly the kind of 21st century that we need to see for rural Ireland. I'm the Taoiseach that was there when we signed the national broadband contract, a contract that Fianna Fáil says they're going to rip up, and that's going to connect 500,000 homes, farms and businesses to high-speed broadband over the next couple of years. And if we're going to the 21st century for rural Ireland, that is the future. You know, the decentralisation of the 21st century is going to be home working. And Apple, for example, in Cork already has about 25% of their staff home working all around Munster and Ireland. But you can only do that if you have a secure connection and a high speed connection. That's the kind of thing that I'm getting done for rural
Ireland.
It's not
maybe
going
another
back to
if
the
it's
past.
Not, if it's
about
okay.
21st century.
If
future.
It's not rural Ireland, maybe people felt that you were going to be a firm CEO, no nonsense, not of this kind of pandering populism. And one of the things that, like, when I asked people at the start of the show to text me about what they wanted to mention to you, it came up, and it's because you raised the national broadband plan and the €3 billion, you know, how it's gone up in price. The National Children's Hospital is an example of how under your watch, public expenditure has rocketed. In this election, you're promising €11 billion more. And I saw you once in the Dáil and someone said about housing, if I could write a cheque, I would. Has that not been your approach? Because you've been beneficiary of all this corporation tax windfall. Have you been fast and loose in failing to get value for money?
Now, there's a couple of things there, Ivan. First of all, if I was a populist and if I was in the business of buying people's votes with the people's money, which is something that, you know, Fianna Fáil had done in the past, Pascal Donoghue and I wouldn't have sat down and produced a budget last October that didn't have tax cuts and didn't have any increases in welfare. Every time Fianna Fáil was heading into election, they had a massive giveaway budget running into it. We knew we were running into election and we decided not to do that because we needed to set aside money in case there was a no-deal scenario in Brexit. And we wanted to get the budget into surplus because all those economists, all those people who warned about the last crash are saying to us that when the economy is going as well as it is, you should actually build up a proper budget surplus so that if there's a downturn, you don't have to have the kind of austerity measures that were brought in the past. And that's exactly what we did. Gone from deficit into surplus.
Well, what about the National Children's Hospital?
Yeah, the National Children's Hospital is a situation and a case where we underestimated the cost of building that hospital. By the way, there is nobody now saying that they can build it any cheaper, certainly not on that site, and nobody anymore who is calling for it to be retendered or paused. We underestimated the cost of it. We accept responsibility for that. We've now revised the public spending code so that when it comes to other mega projects, and we haven't done mega projects for a long time in Ireland, like Metrolink, which is coming down the line.
So the taxpayer just has to suck it up?
That is the cost of building the hospital. It's a state-of-the-art children's hospital. Should have been built a long time ago. The money is not being wasted. That is the cost of it, but the cost was underestimated. The only money wasted on the children's hospital project was the €35 million that Fianna Fáil spent failing to build a children's hospital on the matter. And if it had been built, we wouldn't have the kind of problems that we have now. And, you know, I'll be going home after this, and on the way home, I'll probably pass Crumlin Hospital, and there'll be a mother tonight in Crumlin Hospital, sleeping beside her kid who's there overnight as a patient, possibly on a ward with 3 or 4 beds. People talk a lot about the cost of the hospital. Don't forget the value. Every single room will be an individual room. There'll be a space for a parent to stay the night in every single room. None of those issues about beds being closed because of infection.
And you have no concerns about what broadband could ultimately cost?
I don't, because the broadband contract is the absolute reverse of the children's hospital contract. It's one of the things we learned from that experience. So the broadband contract is the maximum cost. It can only come down. The risk is entirely borne by
even
the private sector.
Even if the uptake is low?
Yeah. The risk is entirely borne by the private sector. So actually any savings that arise come back to the government. I actually think, and I wager you, and I know you're a former bookie, and I won't be able to cash this in for a while, but I'll wager you that when the National Broadband Plan is finished, it's going to come in cheaper than the cost because all of the clawbacks go to the government, or most of the clawbacks go to the government.
Okay.
And all the risk is with the private sector.
Speaking of health, Fine Gael sleepwalked through the 2011 election with this universal health insurance. And when you found yourself minister, you found you had to scrap it because it didn't work. I put it to you that the sort of Pavlovian response of all politicians, and last night watching this, is, oh, it's launch a care. I have to put it to you that free GP care for under 18s is grossly unfair. It confers not GP care for those who most need it, who are means tested with a medical card, but to the wealthiest. And we need to target resources and may overload the system. And I put it to you that in relation to Sláinte care, it also takes all private investment out of the public health service, which will deprive it of 700 million. And all the politicians are saying, we've signed up to Sláinte care, when in actual fact, it could make things worse.
Well, you know, first of all, free GP care is only one part of Sláinte care. And the idea behind it is that parents in Ireland shouldn't have to worry about the cost of going to see the doctor. And some parents...
But some people can afford to pay the 50 euro.
They can, but the question is...
So why
is,
give them free care?
The question is really is whether or not you means test children based on their parents' income, and that's something that I want to move away from. We don't do it in education, for example. We don't say that people should pay for primary education when they could afford it, or secondary education when they could afford it. That's universal. Child benefit, for example, is universal. And we're trying to move away from the idea that parents are means tested based on their... or the kids are means tested based on their parents' income. One of the things I'm proud that we've done in this government, Fine Gael Independent Alliance, is to say to about 40,000 kids who have a profound disability, they're in receipt of what's called a domiciliary care allowance, that they have a full medical card, not just a GP visit card, a full medical card as a right, regardless of their parents' income. And we've ended that awful thing that used to happen all the time, happened under us before, and also happened under Fianna Fáil, where kids who had a profound disability were losing their medical cards because their parents, you know, got a pay increase or their parents got a better job. And I'm glad that we fixed that. And there's other things that I want to do as well in health.
Another reason why you might have halved in popularity was your housing policy. You actually said, if by 2019 we hadn't resolved the homelessness crisis and emergency accommodation, we would have failed. That's exactly what happened under Rebuilding Ireland.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's exactly what I said. You may well be right. I don't recall saying that. But, you know, to say that you failed is to say that you've given up. And we definitely haven't given up on trying to end homelessness or trying to improve and rectify the housing crisis. There has been real progress. You know, the year before I became Taoiseach, the year that Simon Coveney became housing minister, the year that we actually got control of the housing department was only 3 years ago, not 9 years ago. There were less than 10,000 new homes built in Ireland. Last year looks like it was around 21,500. That's not including student accommodation or any of that. So that's a more than
but
doubling.
But it's not enough. It's not enough.
I know it's not enough.
But the Labour Party are putting forward the Strategic Investment Fund, EIB, and NAMA dividend, specific money for extra. Really, you're just saying more of the same.
Well, first of all, I know it's not enough, but you can only ramp up housing supply at a realistic pace. And people can come up with any figure of the number of houses they're going to promise. It can only be scaled up at a certain pace. It has doubled in the past 3 years in the period in which I've been Taoiseach. We can get to 40,000, which will be doubling it again, I believe, in 3 years. And it is starting to make a difference. You know, people can see now that house prices are levelling off. And they're still 20% lower than they were when they peaked under Fianna Fáil. Now, you mentioned things like EIB, like using ISIF. You know, they're all our policies as well. And one of the things I find strange, listening to some of the debate around all of these issues is how often our own policies or the things the government is doing already are being presented as unique ideas from the opposition. Sláinte care is a classic point. You know, opposition parties quoting as their policy a document that we all signed up to 3 years ago.
Today, Her Majesty signed the Brexit Act. It's a reality. Where is the evidence that if there's a change of government, that Brexit will be in jeopardy?
I think it's a question as to whether people want to take the risk. What we've done over the past couple of years, me, Simon Coveney, Helen McEntee, working with our officials and diplomats, is we've managed to build up a huge amount of political capital, develop personal relationships and contacts. I think I've met every single Prime Minister in Europe at this stage, not in Brussels, in their own office or in mine, built up those relationships. Simon Coveney has done the same. We have colleagues of ours like Michel Barnier and Ursula von der Leyen. They're not just European officials, bear in mind. There are party colleagues through the EPP. And we think we're in a very strong position.
But our diplomats will be the same. And the fact of the matter is the opposition have given you 100% green jersey consensus on Brexit.
Yeah, at the end of March, the Taoiseach of Ireland, hopefully me, possibly somebody else, will go into the European Council meeting to agree and to finalise the negotiating guidelines for the new Brexit deal. And that Taoiseach will enter that room on their own. You don't have any officials with you. It's different to when it was when you would have attended European Council as a minister. It's just the heads of government who attend that meeting, and you're in there on your own. And I'm saying to people, why take the risk? Why take the risk of moving away, literally half time in a match when we're 1-0 up, moving away from a tried and trusted team, me, Simon Coveney and Helen McEntee, in favour of Micheál Martin and Sean Haughey and Lisa Chambers and I don't know who. Surely, if the objective is to protect jobs in Ireland, protect our economy, protect our exporters, and to go back to the issue of rural Ireland, the people who are most vulnerable to us failing to negotiate a good trade deal are our farmers, and is the agri-food sector and the rural economy. Still roughly 50% of beef being exported to Britain, 99% of mushrooms, probably half of all cheese, very exposed. And it's a risk that I don't think I would take if I was in their shoes.
Okay. Now, I watched the TV debate last night. We were doing the pre and post show on with Matt on the telly and all that. And I found it a bit of a snore fest. But eyebrows were raised in relation to the kind of off-the-cuff situation in relation to the consumption of drugs. And we had the deputy editor of Hot Press, Stuart Clark, in sitting where you are now, saying that there is a very strong case to decriminalise drugs. Is this something you're open to?
It's not our policy. We did give a consideration, by the way, actually an all-party committee chaired by David Stanton in the last Dáil. Looked at what they do in Portugal, which is this decriminalisation model. And they've had some success, by the way, in that model in Portugal and recommended that we should do it. And on foot of that, I'm sorry for getting very technical, but this is important policy stuff. We then set up a working group under a judge. I think it's Gareth Sheehan.
So you're open to decriminalising?
No, I'm not. And what that
Why
group,
not? I'm
about to tell you, what that group came up with was the view that our legal system and the way it works is very different to the Portuguese system of codified law where they have misdemeanours and so on. And they recommended that we shouldn't decriminalise it, but we should change the approach, which is to a health-led approach. So if somebody is found in possession of drugs, you know, maybe the first time or the second time, that you don't prosecute them, because then potentially you're
giving
them...
And do you support that?
That's actually government policy. It's not news. It was announced months ago that we would move towards a health-led approach, which would be to caution somebody on the first occasions, maybe link them up with health advice.
And only
prosecute dealers and people who are repeat offenders.
So why the kind of discomfort last night? I mean, like, we read the Hot Press interview and we talked to, and it wasn't clear cut. I mean, like, when is the last time that you took any form of cannabis or illegal drug?
Look, I suppose I was caught off guard by the question, and even though I've been asked it before and I've answered it before, and, you know, what I never want to get into is that kind of, you know, those kind of, obviously it was all when I was a student and in college.
So you haven't, the last time would have been before 2004?
No, like, I'm not the only former teacher who has, by the way.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm not here. Like, I drink too much. You know what I mean? I bet too much. So do I on occasion.
Yeah. But it's not the kind of thing, you know, that I've ever wanted to get into much detail about, largely because I appreciate that I am Taoiseach, that I am a role model in a way, and I don't want to send out the message to young people who are under pressure to experiment with drugs or try drugs that it's kind of okay and sure the Taoiseach did it and it's in any way cool, because it's not. Illegal substances can be very deleterious to your health.
What is the answer to the question? When did you last consume any sort of substance like that?
Back when I was a student.
Right. And so, like, I'm just wondering, like, I often think in these things that, because, you know, You'd be doing Brian Dobson tomorrow. You'd be doing Clare Byrne. You'd be doing everyone. This question will continue to come up. Do you have any, like, I have said publicly, what people do in their private time at house parties or anything is their own business and doesn't interfere in any way in your public duties. Like, are you afraid that someone said, well, sure, I was at a party in Castle Knockshire and he was off his head?
Yeah, well, I'm a great believer that politicians should be able to have a private life and should be able to have a private past as well. And, you know, I spent the last 3 years with two Gardaí with me at all times. So, you know, I think that probably answers that question.
So just to go through, you said about cannabis. I'm not an expert on this, but cocaine, ecstasy, party pills, LSD, ketamine, MDMA. Have you consumed any of those substances other than cannabis?
Well, just cannabis. But like I say, you know, I really don't want to get into the detail of this, you know, when, where, who, you know. Where did you get it from?
Why not?
Because I think...
You see, sometimes that's the best way to kill a story. Because if you leave a tail on it, you know what I mean? Then it's and this and that and the other. Like, you've got to get to your end position, I find, or it becomes a nine-day wonder.
Yeah, no, like I say, it shouldn't be, because this isn't the first time I've been asked this question, nor is it the first time I've answered it. But the message that I would like to come across is that I don't condone in any way... young people or anybody, you know, experimenting because of the potential health consequences of that and also the fact that we all understand better now than perhaps we did in the past. Certainly I understand better now than I did in the past the link between consumption of illegal drugs and criminal networks, and we've seen a number of very serious crimes in the last couple of weeks and the truth is that is fueled by people consuming illegal drugs.
So you never consumed any of these while you were a doctor? And do you think the issue is cleared up? Because you know the way the media are. They're like a rat pack.
Probably not, because, like I say, it kind of comes up every 6 months or a year. It doesn't go up that often.
But let's be clear about this. Michael Gove and other people, I don't know how many American politicians, these things, like, it's not the end of the world. Often Obama himself. I mean, the point is this, that if a really sensitive issue comes up, the reason why someone would say, oh, we better not get there, because the answer is worse than the cover-up, we'll just say, or the denial. Do you know what I mean? And I'm not alleging anything. Like Jeremy Hunt has said he's taking cannabis, Adrian Leadsom, Dominic Raab. I mean, like, any politician would not be alone. Like, do you not think it's better to be fully frank and then you say, there's nothing more to be said?
I think I've been fully frank.
Right. So it's open and shut. Since 2004, you have never consumed any such substance.
That's correct, but I don't think it's going to... Okay. Doesn't mean I'm not going to be asked again in another year, but...
Okay. Anyway. Final question I want to ask is, you're a young man, and I said when I went into the Dáil at 21 that I would leave politics in my 40s. Leo at 50, irrespective of how this election goes... I mean, it looks good on the CV, ministerial positions, Taoiseach of a country, all this kind of thing. What's your next big job after? Like, would you like to be in the WHO, the UN, an EU job? You're an internationalist. Like, in terms of, like, as a daydreamer, what would you like? Because I've been politician, bookie, bankrupt, everything, broadcaster, accident. Is there anything you'd like to be in your future life?
I sincerely hope that my my next big job is going to be the one that I have now, and that is being able
at 50
to serve the country as Taoiseach for the next 4 or 5 years. I haven't given huge consideration.
So you will go on indefinitely in politics.
Ivan, this is a trick question. As you well know.
No, sorry, I could say I want to be a rock star. I mean, like, there's nothing. This is human.
I don't know. Maybe a shock jock.
Right.
How's that working out?
You're welcome to the hard shoulder anytime.
I might be able to inherit your seat when you retire.
Exactly. That would be imminent. All right. Well, look, I wish you well in the election, and we look forward to talking to you in the leaders' debates later on in Virgin. My thanks to Leo Varadkar, Fine Gael leader, TD for Dublin West. Thank you for being my guest, and we will have all the party leaders in studio.